Hi, Anya. I'm glad to get to talk to you again. And this time I get to find out a little bit more about you so I can write an article now for my Huffington Post blog. So I was really inspired by what I read in your book, Born Connected, Life in the World of a Visionary Intuitive. It's autobiographical. How is that powerful, useful to convey?
Right. I think, Suno, where my mind is going right now is being a child and fascinated by a kaleidoscope. And I think that might have been my first exposure to a world can shift in one turn, and in this case, I'll say in one turn of a perspective, things can be different. Just like when you're turning the tube of the kaleidoscope and all of a sudden, you know, that the colors are different and they change shape. Well, when a person's perspective shifts inside, they have new eyes to see and hear and feel. And when I realized that that shift in perspective can happen in a moment, it might take many, you know, days and weeks and years leading up to it, but the actual shift happens in a moment. That is so innate in me to greet each person, whether I'm, you know, formally working with them professionally or sitting beside them on a bus. When I look into a person's eyes that connect with mine, all I see is the world. The whole world sits right there in that one person. And if some small thing can happen that shifts their perspective, then the world changes, starting with their world. And, you know, when I thought a little bit before we got together for this interview, I went back to that moment of the kaleidoscope. So for me, really, that's what it's about. And so Born Connected, Life in the World of a Visionary Intuitive is bringing my perspective on different situations and experiences with people and clients in my life. And the people that I've asked to read some of the chapters, because it's not published yet, and that's exactly what's happening. They're coming back and saying, I realized something in my own life from having read that situation with that couple and your perspective of that. So that's a whole lot of words around probably something I could have said more simply.
That piece of relating to other people's life, how that is like the catalyst to make a change. That's what I hear you saying from how your clients have connected.
Yes.
The other piece that comes up with me as you're talking is a little bit of the dissolvement of time in the sense of that something that may have occurred 20, 30 years ago still seems to resonate in the present, but a quick shift of perspective dissolves the issue.
Yes. And then it dissipates and allows no more access to the old limiting belief or the old conditioning. I just did a workshop yesterday with some folks, and I think of this this one particular individual. Basically, due to some things that went on in her childhood, she cast that child aside and was ignoring that aspect of herself. That was then, this is now, la la la. When in fact, for us to be whole and integrated and integrous and authentic, we need all aspects of ourself. We can't cast away you know, the aspect maybe that, you know, experienced some abuse or wounding or whatever it looked like back then, this has to be integrated through the whole being. And boy, she got that, and, you know, through working with her, of course, for a bit, and you see the light come out of her eyes and then embrace the child that she had cast aside because she had been cast aside as a child.
It reminds me of a Potter's Missions ministry. The man who would give this presentation lesson, he used Christ's word biblically, but he sat in the front of a church with a clay and a potter's wheel, and he proceeded to build a like a vase, and I could see the lessons through every action that he did. But the one that really struck me strongly was then, after the pot was finished, he scratched little markings in it to give it a design. And he said, "These are scars." Mm. And I could glaze away the scars so you don't see them, but then he would lose the beauty of the markings. And when you were saying about integrating all of your experience, even the things that people see as scars, it reminds me of that same lesson I saw. So not that we want to intentionally create traumas in our life, but the perspective shift. Talk a little bit more about the perspective shift. That comes from something we experience as traumatic,
right?
And then how it turns into
beauty. Well, there's an expression I use, and it would be when the trauma comes out of the trauma. And
the trauma comes out of the karma.
The trauma comes out of the trauma.
Oh, okay.
And it's no longer trauma. It's just something that happened.
Okay.
Right. Right. I think of, again, in a workshop setting and having some folks blindfolded work with clay and picking out different pieces of clay. And what I do is I play different kinds of music to evoke feelings in the person and have them go back to their childhood. I'll play a wide variety of songs and I'm talking them through it. The point is, you know, there's tears and, you know, the laughter and all kinds of emotions are going into this piece of clay that's forming and shaping in their hand while they're blindfolded and listening. So they finish that, they come out of it, they look at their piece, and they're amazed by the shape and the colors that they've brought together just through feeling as a result of hearing the music and being blindfolded. And then at the end, they choose someone to give that to and to watch that exchange of what was felt like wounding and have it become a gift to another, and then have the person who received it share why that had such meaning to them. Powerful piece of work.
That's fascinating, that you actually use something physical movement.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I want to, you know, one of the things I realized that even the mental health profession is looking less, psychoanalytic therapy, talk therapy, is less effective than behavioral. But what you just did by physically using clay and such, explain that a little bit more. Like, how does that evoke change more profoundly?
Well, any time that you can get anything outside of you, where you can see it, touch it, feel it, taste it, shift already happens right at that point because it's outside of you. It's no longer inside. You have it outside of you.
So when you can shift something outside of you, then it...
From inside to outside. From inside to outside. you'll often see it differently.
So it's about manifesting.
Yes.
So I know that in the field of life coaching, for example, I understand it started out with mm-hmm. helping CEOs, you know, manifest greater and greater things.
Right, right.
And it moved more towards just something for everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But it is about manifesting.
Mm-hmm.
I also see it as unifying the mind and thought with
yes.
the body.
Yes. Yes. I think in this moment, I think of Thomas Leonard, and they give him the label of the founder of coaching. He was the founder of Coach University. That was in, I think, around 1996. He's passed since. It's now called Coach U. It's one of the largest coach training schools. Well, that's where I attended. It's virtual. And then shortly after, I was invited to go on faculty. I was on faculty for Coach University for 3.5 years, training thousands of coaches all over the world. And extraordinary experience. Coaching for me, Suna, it's simply, you're in the business of human development. Holistically, you're in the business of human development. Because at the end of the day, what do we all have in common? We're human beings. Whether we're a CEO, the range of people that I've worked with has been across the board, you know, from high ups in companies to a mechanic. And it's all the same. It's actually all the same threads that we're working with. It's just, where is it on the spectrum? I'm not enough. I am enough. Work too much. You know, it's all about saving time and energy and stress. And it's basically all boils down to the same thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it's the way
also,
you go about it.
Yeah. So I'm very cyclical, so I have about 3 or 4 different questions at the same time here. And one is about the threads of, several threads in human development from childhood through adulthood,
mm-hmm.
And how, as we unwind some of these knots in adulthood, if there's something you learn about what would make an easier childhood or a smoother flow in childhood. Are there any specific components or points that you see are critical to every human being to really be a healthy, fulfilled human being?
Mm-hmm. Well, my greatest teachers, I've had many. My greatest teachers right now are my grandchildren. They're 4 and 5. And what I know on this end, you know, having gone through my life in the way in which I did, mm-hmm. I can now see how the early conditioning, familial, societal, how that conditioning gets laid on us early as children. And we don't mm-hmm. We don't know how to parent, really, if we think about it. We don't know. We really, really don't know about the skills of parenting. Yes, there are some courses now starting. So if we go to the children can be taught the skills of coaching. Absolutely, because yeah. I'm doing it with them. And you'll hear things like, Cole, I need some personal space right now. She's 4.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just one tiny, tiny example, Suna. And if we can work, I'm so glad you mentioned about the children. If we can work with the children on communication, because then what will happen mm-hmm. is then they go back to the parents and they can say things like, I'm just a kid. in an appropriate moment. Does that make sense? When things are, you know, but the parents are under stress and we're all, you know, trying to make things work and two parents working and, you know, all of a sudden you pop your cork. We've all been there, done that. And then here's the child. Mm-hmm. If the child's taught the skill to say, "Mommy, I'm just a kid," it's that 1 second reminder snapping the person back into reality. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, that's like that shift, that momentary
shift. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And this is why in Life Coaching Magazine, which is my online magazine, I have a section that's called Everyday Life Coaching. And basically, that's bringing in these everyday life coaching skills into the moment, you know, through articles and there's lots there. And because people don't know. And when people know better sooner, they do better. They just don't know.
And it's reminders is what I call it for myself. Like you, when you mentioned the everyday little skills.
Yes.
Sometimes they're reminders to, like the little girl says to Mommy, "I'm just a kid." Right?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or
Sienna says to Cole, "I hate you." And Cole goes, "Is that true?" And she goes, "Nope."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay. So to really watch what you're saying too, right?
Mm-hmm. And teaching them coaching skills. And basically what is coaching? Coaching simply is an advanced form of communication.
If you
really sit with that, and that you know is one of my favorite definitions for coaching, and that comes from Thomas Leonard, founder of Coach University. It is an advanced form of communication. If you really think about it, that's how we're going to change our world, is through the words and the way in which we use words and put them together. Does that make sense?
Yes. I also wanted to ask you about other forms of communication besides words.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use that in your workshop?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it goes beyond that, actually. Multidimensional communication. What that means for me is someone like myself who is a highly sensitive person, or HEA, what I refer to as HEA, a highly energetically aware person, is working on a higher sensory level and can feel the subtle energies of a shift in the environment. So if I'm working with someone, I can actually feel within me, because my body's highly empathic, we're all empathic, it's to what degree, I can feel when something's bubbling up or about to shift. So I kind of have a little bit of a leading edge there. And so I can meet them where they are in the moment, but have a sneak preview of what's coming in their system.
How do you do that? Or can you explain that a little bit more?
Because I can sense when the shift is about to happen. It's like when you're creating something, and just before the idea is about to pop or the painting's about to be finished, there'll be creative tension. There'll be a moment of tension, like just before a mother gives birth, everything gets quiet in her system. There's that moment, and then boom, the shift happens. Well, I can feel that in me. And the person that I'm working with may not be aware of that because they're too in their, you know, material at the time.
In their material, you think?
Yeah, or in their stuff, or, you know, however, mm-hmm. what's happening for them in the moment.
So this shift, where is it happening?
Different in every moment. It can happen on a cognitive level. It can happen in the emotional body. It's different for each person, but you will see, you'll see, sense, hear, and feel it. The voice will change. The pupil will become more dilated. The color will change in the face. There's many signs of when the shift happens, and it's different for everybody.
So I'm also very interested in the effect. We talked about each individual, and you also said as you look into the eyes of an individual, mm-hmm. you see the world.
Because the point of change is within that individual. Change, mm-hmm. the point of change. They are the point of change in that moment.
So can you talk more about how the shift in an individual is correlates to the shift in the world?
I think of I'm not well versed on it, but are you familiar with the butterfly effect?
Not the butterfly effect.
Okay, so there's other language for it.
The 100th monkey effect?
No. It's like if a butterfly flaps its wing in the rainforest, that can show up as a hurricane in Georgia.
Right. I didn't know.
Okay. Yeah, it's called the butterfly effect. So we are all connected, would you agree with that? We're all connected, mm-hmm. right? So if something in me shifts, something in you is moving. When that wave mm-hmm. ripples through the ocean, it cannot affect the entire ocean.
Okay.
And so that's right. If something in you shifts and you go home, your family dynamics will be different. They cannot remain the same. And what I find is what will happen is the person will either move toward you or away from you. Which is actually appropriate if you think about it, because if you've shifted internally, you're mm-hmm. either going to attract in, or what's out there is going to be repelled by you.
Okay. So in this, knowing this, mm-hmm. is this one reason why people are reluctant to change?
Yes, because they can feel, it's kind of like the person who stays in an abusive relationship or with an abusive boss at work or, you know, something like that. They're thinking the devil they know is the lesser of the two evils, if you will. The known is safer than the unknown. Very common, very, very common.
Mm-hmm. So then that's actually dealing with the fear of the unknown, right?
Absolutely. And as we know, everything is either love or fear. It's all distortions, mm-hmm. you know, or at the end of all of it, fear sits at the root of all of it is fear. All of the things, whether it's anger or, you know, sadness, if you really look at the bottom root of all of it, the person's scared. So we're either moving from love or fear.
So how do you make the shift to start moving from love?
For me, let's say I'm working with someone, whether it's over the phone or in workshops, in direct proportion, Suna, to the self-love that I am connected to within my own being, and I say self almost with a capital S, the self-love, the self-regard, the self-respect, the self-empowerment, and all of those things, the more in connection I am to that reverence for the sacred space of the being that I am, moving source energy through me out into the world, the more I am connected to that, something happens in that space of love. Because that is what we are. We are space. So let's use the bus analogy. You know, if you're really connected to you in a space of self-love, your face is, your skin is shiny, your eyes are glistening, you're open, you're not masked, and you get on a bus and you sit there, and then someone sits down beside you, and you can feel if they're cloaked, if they're hiding, if they're not connected, for whatever reason in their life, they don't feel that. If you stay breathing you into you and presencing your own presence, it's amazing what happens. That person, you'll start to notice their body language will change a little bit. They might take a quick glance at you. It's fabulous. Even taking it down to the unspoken, which you mentioned before. Often on a, you know, on another level, I'll move through the world in the way of just, you know, sharing love. I love you. I love you. I mean, I love the human condition. Wow, aren't we all on a ride? And when you hold that space, something does, something's different when you're in the presence of other people. They can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
It also works the other way. People can feel when you can feel them, and they may reject it. And that I have experienced a lot in life too. In my own therapy process with my therapist, she was one of the ones that really helped me realize, why do I feel so rejected by so many people? I haven't even opened my mouth. And it's because they feel so seen by you.
They feel... What?
So seen.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So that's scary for people?
Yes, yes.
Why do you think that is?
Because they're hiding.
Okay.
They're hiding.
And they're hiding.
Yeah, they're hiding. They're masking, they're cloaking.
And why?
Whatever's gone on in their life, they've had to go through the layers of protecting themselves so as not to be seen in the world.
So that then trust comes into this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Most people are overworked and underliving.
I love that.
Mm. Overworked and underliving. And... there's a very, I'm just going to play with words now for a minute. There's a very simple antidote to that. And this is my intention in coaching and is holding the space of be more, do less.
Yeah.
Because when you be more and you do less, the reason you do less is because you're bringing more of the being to the doing, and it changes the doing. Do I need to say that different or give an example?
You know, it would be good for, yes, rather,
right,
because
okay.
I get it.
Yeah.
But I,
yeah. So, what do I mean by be more fully who you are, connected to who you are? These magnificent beings walking around in the world who are influencing with every breath you take in and exhale, you are influencing the environment around you to include nature, just as nature is influencing you, because we're all cohabitating in this environment where eventually where we all want to go is into cohesion or to be cohesive or balance each other out. That's eventually where we're all going. And the more you can be aware of the light and love that you are and the reason you're here is to love, simply to be love. And so when you bring the being, love, the love that you are, to everything that you do, picking up a bar of soap and washing your hands, love touches the soap. Next person comes by, picks up the soap, and so on and so on. So you bring more of the being to the doing. And the doing is work or home or, you know, we all know the most powerful thing you can do is to touch. And just gently taking one finger and touching another person on the arm and saying, how are you? You are extending love, because what is your hand? It is the most direct connection from your heart. So your hands are very powerful in touch and in movement. Just, I mean, as I'm speaking with you, my hands are moving. We're moving energy. We're moving space through our hands, which are directly connected to our heart.
So, and in the butterfly analogy, mm-hmm. each movement is affecting
yes.
the rest of the world.
Absolutely.
And if that movement is a movement of love coming from the heart,
yes.
it's putting more love into the world. Yeah. I don't know if you are familiar with the, I think there were two or three satellites that measured the magnetic field of
yes.
the Earth.
Yes.
They had the spike right after 9/11.
Yes, yes.
And the magnetic field of the Earth really shifted.
Yes, and we all shifted. I mean, we can't not.
Yeah.
And we, yeah. I happen to have, I used to have average around 36 coaches in each class that I did. And I did about 12 classes a week. That's a lot of lives to touch. And on that particular day of 9/11, I had 8 classes. So I touched a lot of people as all of that was happening. It was amazing.
Wow.
It was amazing. It was amazing watching everybody line up and, okay, I have an aunt in New York. I'll call her and tell her your husband's name who was there on business. I mean, watching it all network was amazing.
And what did you notice about the shift in the people you were with at that day?
It wasn't fear. It was like something stood up, whether they were in Spain or New Zealand, something stood up in our humanity to be there for each other. The emphasis was not on the attack. It was more on what can we do? How can we support? And it was incredible. Of course, I went right into moving into a meditation, you know, moving into relaxing any fear about it, creating a visualization so that wave of fear that was moving through the world could bump up again a gentle shore. Yeah. We have that kind of effect on the world. You can't.
Yeah.
You cannot fight war with war.
Right.
And most people are walking around, believe it or not, unconsciously, that there is an inner war going on. They're in turmoil inside.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And so that war, inner war, how do you fight that?
Yeah,
I like to use the word fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
caught yourself right there. You don't fight
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I wasn't going to use the word
yeah.
fight, but I couldn't come up with another word.
Yeah, yeah. Come to recognize it for what it is. It is both ends of the same thing. It's the paradox. And what's wanting to happen is a balance point. And Suna, at this point, I cannot help but think about you and what you mention in your book about your parents. They were the total opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, Suna, the balance point.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So finding the balance.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The one balancing out, balancing their differences out. So if one realizes you can't fight war with war, then you look for the commonality places. What is it that we all want? We all want to be loved. We all want to be cared for. We all want to have, you know, a roof over our head. If we start looking at the commonalities, there's level ground right there.
Well, using your example of me with my opposite parents,
yes,
what I see is that they were two very opposites, and then me being the balancing point was actually the next level.
Yes.
So out of the two differences and extreme differences, it's like in a conflict, well, I've worked with children too, you see that, you know, one wants it one way, the other one wants it the other way. And the resolve is when they both go into a higher,
yes,
not just compromise, but a higher
absolutely
level.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what is love? Love is higher thought.
Mm-hmm.
Love is higher thought, higher thought. The moment you start thinking a higher thought, you're moving into the vibration of love. And so let's take siblings, or like your mother and father. It really is just two rough stones rubbing against each other to smooth each other out.
Mm-hmm. And also, how about the conflict is actually the stimulus to move to the higher thought.
Absolutely.
To move out of stagnation.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, the catalyst, it's right there. And what's required for that, Suna, is choice point. We have to be conscious enough, mindful, aware enough to know that we are at choice. I think of one of the greatest lessons in my life is through therapy, actually, is where I learned something, Suna, I never knew, that I had a choice. That was a foreign concept to me.
Mm-hmm.
Foreign concept, because when you're brought up in a, you know, a controlling environment, patriarchal controlling environment, that choice, what's that? You're being told every minute what to do, how to do it, etc. So choice opened up. I learned that there was such a thing as I was at choice, and then became conscious about that choice, because that's the space where you can then choose higher thought.
So if you could speak to parents mm-hmm. about this realization you made as a particular parenting skill, what would you say?
Well, it boils down to this for me, is we all know when you know better, you do better. So if something's going on in your family environment that you feel not happy about or inadequate about, do something about that. And what that is some form of education, whether it's hooking up with a coach or a book or a therapist, get some form of education as to why and how that might be occurring in your family, whether it's constant arguing or whatever. If it doesn't feel good, the simple solution is when you know better, do better. So become informed. Why are we arguing? Why does my son slam his door? Why is the dog always barking? What is going on? Start asking questions.
You know, as you first thought that out, the first thing I thought of is oftentimes it's a child in the family.
Yes.
That sees something mm-hmm. that they don't like, and they do act up. They do something.
Yes.
They may scream. They may act out.
Yeah. It's actually their job. It's actually their mm-hmm. job, because the children come in congruent. The younger they are, the less conditioned, and they're more pure and higher vibration. They're closer to source, because they're not fully embodied yet, so they're still connected to source energy. So then when they come into the home to the lower vibration, let's just use that language as an easy way to understand a lower vibration or frequency, that they can't be in that. So they're going to become a sounding board that something is off here. Something's off. They're going to be the squeaky wheel.
Right.
Yeah.
And
what happens is parents often blame the child for acting out what they energetically can't hold. They can't hold the disharmony because they are in harmony. Their systems are already in harmony. They can't hold it. So they're going to act it out because everything's energy and energy wants to move.
Well, it reminds me of your example in the chapter that I read, chapter 2 of your book, of the couple that had disharmony in their life. That mm-hmm. then you traced it back to that they were living by their socialized self instead of by their true self.
Absolutely.
So in that way, I can see that adults are the more socialized children,
mm-hmm.
Being children we call adults.
Mm-hmm.
And the younger children are the less socialized.
Yes.
So may be able to access what resonates more with nature
mm-hmm.
than trueness and authenticness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pay attention to the children. They'll let you know what's off. That's across
right.
the board, whether it's a school system or, yeah, pay attention to the children. Children... do not care how you feel. They care that you know how you feel.
Aha.
So in other words, we're back to the congruency. And a lot of us parents, grandparents, we're not always congruent. And the child will feel it. And the child will call us out on it. They won't use adult words. They'll act it out.
Right.
So, you know, back to what can parents do? You know, if it doesn't feel good at home, that's an indicator that something's off. Something's
right.
off because it should feel good. Not should, but you know what I'm saying here. And so there's an indicator that something's off, and it's not the child. The child is doing their job and acting out an incongruency in the family system.
I'm going to go into a very daring area.
Come on!
Yeah. Then the children who act out in schools, I'm jumping all the way to the
mm-hmm.
extreme
mm-hmm.
of the young children that bring a gun to school and kill others.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What can you explain that? What's going on in that?
Yeah, I can't explain it. I can only, for me in this moment, Suna, I'm just going to drop in and I'm going to ask the question inside of source, and let's just see what comes. They are single-handedly acting out for the collective, meaning the system is off. People are under so much stress. And let's just use the word teenagers. They don't fit in. They just don't fit in to society. They're not being heard. Teenagers can be such a contribution to how a school is run or to how a community comes together. They're amazing when you give them a voice. And so a weapon gets picked up as a voice to be heard loud and clear. Just like in the home, there'll be usually one child that acts out what's off, out and move that out into society, like a school system. One individual will become focused energy that acts out for the whole. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And so I think how many times when I hear these things, I start weeping. It is, yes, for the people who lost their lives and their family. I weep for the one who did it.
Yeah.
I weep because that is the wake-up call to all of us and the role that that person is playing in our life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Whether it's that we need to change the gun laws or whatever, it's a single-pointed action affecting the world.
Well, I want to actually roll this over to a positive because not too long ago I wrote an article about what I call Generation Peace, and it was interviewing different youth service organization leaders. And when you were talking about the ability that children have to run these mm-hmm. organizations or help with these organizations, the director of Youth Service America, Steve Culbertson, was saying the same thing. He actually had children on his board of directors mm-hmm. who even vote on his salary. He acts on this belief, and I see this connection to it's communication. Like you said, coaching is developing communication.
It's an advanced form of communication is really what it is. Really.
And it's an advanced form. And I think there has been a breach or break in communication between mm-hmm. Adults and children.
Mm-hmm.
Could you say something to adults or parents about how coaching may be beneficial for teens?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Let's see. Let me just sit with the teens. Frustrated is the first word that comes. Frustrated because they don't feel heard. Because their language is different. And the greatest gift that you can give another human being is to enter their world. And the way in which to enter another person's world is through language. So that might look like, take some time to listen to rap music. Take some time to pay attention to the words they're using and the world they're living in, instead of being at war with it or condemning it, or you only get 2 hours on the computer, you know, once a week or whatever. Start entering, become curious, let curiosity become your best friend in entering the teenager's world. And then get curious about the language they're using. Like, what words, because I'm not in connection. What words?
Texting.
I mean, the texting, right, okay. So texting, okay. So on some level, that is their world, because the new ones coming in, and that's a whole nother subject for another day, these amazing beings that are hitting the planet now that are so telepathic and so connected, they understand technology because they are the technology. They communicate like that. They're wired like that. That's why they get the computers so quickly. Yes. So I would say enter their world. And another powerful piece is silence. Look at your own interpretation of the silence from the teenager. I'm going to my room now, and they close the door, and they're there for 4 hours. What are you doing with that information? Where is that landing in you? Is that bringing you back to when you were a teenager with some unresolved things? That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So it goes back to
yes
from the beginning. We
yes.
talked about
yes
the connection of childhood and adult, and then how our own children stimulate that
right
child experience within us.
That's right, because, again, that's their job. Our children, or let's just take ourselves right now, Suna, you and I, we are our parents' next iteration. And so whatever is unresolved in the parents, we're here to resolve or pass it on.
Right.
If we don't resolve it, we'll pass it on, and that, and so on, and so on, and so on. And that is the evolution of consciousness. That is, you know, life's a river, and that's, you know, moving through the river of life, generation after generation. We are our parents' next iteration. So it's, we're either going to move it or not, but what is unresolved in them will move through us. We'll either work it or we won't, but it will happen eventually. It's because it's law. It's nature. It's law. Nature never goes back and corrects. It moves forward. Like just say, you know, the lineage of alcoholism, and then someone is conscious enough, you know, and maybe had challenges with alcoholism and, you know, has gone through, you know, recovery and just hook up with good therapists and coaches and just says, the buck stops here with me now. That affects seven generations before and seven in front.
This is a great way to finish up, I think, because we can see this kind of full circle of how the individual fits the world and then also how it moves forward into the future.
Yes, yes. So the point of change is within the individual, and that is why someone like you, Suna, I cannot not be with you and feel you right now are the center of the universe. The point of change is within the individual. You don't need to change the world. Be with the individual.
I absolutely agree. This is fantastic. Well, thank you so much. This is so wonderful to talk to you.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you, well, Suna.
So nice talking to you.
Okay.
Yeah, have a fantastic day.
Stay in touch. Bye-bye.